Welcome to Changemaker with founder of Gypsy Tea and social entrepreneur Zina Muzika.
This new podcast is to help you embrace change and experience amazing people and entrepreneurs. We're going to be sharing secrets, habits, and change-making abilities with you so that you can apply them to your life and make a life of your dreams.
This is Changemaker with Zina Muzika.
Hello and welcome to Changemaker. I'm your host, Zina Muzika. I hope that you will join me on social media. At Mistress of Tea is my Twitter handle, and on Facebook at Z-H-E-N-A. I love carrying on the conversations after these podcasts, and I believe today's podcast will have a lot of conversation ongoing. It's a fascinating topic about sexual identity and gender identification, and I believe that as we move into more of a 21st century point of view, that the lines have been blurred, and that we all can be more comfortable in who we are, however we are born, whatever we are destined to be. There are a lot of transgender issues. I pulled up a fact sheet that I wanted to just talk about a little bit. An estimated 2 to 5% of the population is transgender, which is experienced some degree of gender dysphoria. The number of people who identify as transsexual and undergo sex reassignment is smaller. Recent statistics from the Netherlands indicate that 1 in 12,000 natal males undergo sex reassignment and about 1 in 34,000 natal females. Over time, the gap is between the two is reported to be shrinking. But here's the challenge I'm having is hate violence. A nationwide survey of bias-motivated violence against LGBT people from 1985 to 1998 found that incidents targeting transgender people accounted for 20% of all murders and about 40% of all police-initiated violence. That is something that has to change. And so today we have an old college friend of mine, Henry, who is here to talk about the issues facing him as a transgender individual and also facing the culture as a whole. And we want to really talk about this in a raw way, in a real way, in a compassionate way, and in a way that's looking for solutions to alleviate ignorance and actually bring awareness to all so that we can all allow everyone to be themselves and to also start to diminish this odd level of you know, maybe it's fear, maybe it's just ignorance, but we're here to actually lift the veil a little bit and talk to Henry about his experience as a transgender. Hi, Henry.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So your bio is a hashtag real live trans adult, which is awesome, hashtag. Mm-hmm. So for those of you who are listening, you can hashtag real live trans adult. Henry's also a storyteller, half Irish and half Southern. Couldn't have been easy, huh?
Zealous, a lot of fun.
Yeah, zealously celebrating his second adolescence at 38 years of age. Bravo. An everyday activist, IT consultant, dirt lover, saltwater enthusiast, introvert, pit bull parent, complexifier, son, brother, friend. Hi, Henry. So good to hear your voice and to be with you after 20 years of not seeing you in person.
You too. Yeah, this is great.
So, so some crazy statistics, and I have to say, was it last year when Transparent came out on Amazon? Mm-hmm. I thought it was a beautiful and compassionate and compelling look at someone who had lived their whole life with one identity that was gender specific to somebody who was saying, you know, this is actually really who I am, and everything that the actor has to go up against with you know, the prejudice and the fear and the confusion. So tell me a little bit about your story and how your transition is happening and where you are in the process.
Sure. So I am indeed zealously celebrating my second adolescence, and a male adolescence at that, at the age of 38. So I guess I'll start currently and then move backwards. So I actually, while I've known that I was trans, honestly, for my entire life and have expressed that, I didn't decide to actually medically transition until I was 37. And so a little bit later than, I'm going to correct myself, actually, and say, I always want to say, so a little bit later than most people. Actually, no, not at all. People transition at all ages. And part of the reason why it did take me so long to finally make that decision to medically transition was that there is a lack of information. There was a lack of evidence-based medicine that we were, you know, that we were seeing, and then there was just a lot of fear and shame on my part about everyone in my life knowing who I was, because up to that point, a lot of people knew who I was, and when I say that, I mean male, and that my name was Henry, but my family didn't know, and some of my oldest friends didn't know, but I had been actually out. I've been telling people that I was trans and that I was male, actually since I was about 17 or 18 years old. And
that's when I knew you.
Right, exactly. And so, so I've laughed about this and us reconnecting over this topic in particular, because it was actually, and this may be news to you, it was actually you who told me that this was even possible, that there was such a thing as a transsexual person, and that there was this, you know, that medically this could happen.
Yeah.
I told you that because
I had grown up in California and you I think you were in the South, and I had been exposed to a beautiful breadth of diversity here. So maybe that's where it was, because I had met transgender people and I had some friends who were. So I'm glad I was able to enlighten you.
definitely. You get a lot of credit in my story, and you have for years. I actually remember driving around on a Sunday in that Valiant.
Oh my God, my car.
and I actually remember being very, I don't know if I was crying, I probably was crying, but being very upset and just saying, you know, gosh, I feel so much anxiety all the time. I'm so fearful all the time, and I feel so different from everybody else. This is also probably a good time to say that the college that we both attended was actually a women's college.
Yeah, all women's college. Cotty College in Nevada, Missouri, not the hotbed of open-mindedness, might I add.
No, not at all. I mean, a wonderfully... a generous community, a gracious community, a very tiny rural community. So it wasn't a hotbed of diversity in role models that maybe would have been great at that point in time. So it was actually in college that I began to talk more openly about feeling male, and actually Cotty and our schoolmates were fantastic about it. They were
Absolutely.
Great. I think most people, I think one of the things that complicates this, and I'm shooting from the hip here, there's no, you know, empirical evidence I'm going to point to on this one. I think for the most part, when we see people, we do see gender, and it's important to see gender and to acknowledge gender, and see those complexities, but I think oftentimes when we have those interactions with people that we are very close with, that we love, and that we support, we're not necessarily coding that love and support by gender, right? And so we see people that we love and we care for, we don't necessarily always, it's not always earmarked as this man or this woman that we love or care for. And so I
agree.
I agree.
I think love, you know, I loved you, you know, when you were a kid, we were kids, and I didn't really have a sense of, I love you because you're this way or that way. It was, right. I loved you because you had a heart of gold. And to me, you were very vulnerable at the time, and you're easy to love. So I think you're right with that, in that, you know, my nephew, actually he's my cousin's son, but my cousin's like my sister. He came out when I think he was 12. Mm-hmm. And in a community, Lompoc, California is not a very open-minded community, and there's not a big gay population. And, you know, he has handled himself with the, I mean, unbelievable courage and grace, and got a 4.7 GPA, raised by a single mom, is putting himself through college. Like, I think that there's a level where when somebody has a direct relationship with somebody who is blurring the lines of sexuality, then all of a sudden your heart cracks open and it's easy to have a relationship with everyone.
No, I agree. And that's funny. And you actually talk about, you know, heart cracks open in your book. And that's actually a phrase that I've used for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And it's something actually that I really like to talk about when I when I do say, hey, you know, when I finally came out to my family, you know, my world broke open. And
what was that like? Tell me how that went.
Sure. Sure. So I actually started, funny, going back to the Valiant, that I loved that car.
I did too. I did too. I lost it in a divorce soon after, which we could talk about.
Fine. But it was such a wonderful, wonderful car, and so many great moments I had in that car with you. And actually, so that... And clearly, this was a very specific, you know, interaction and moment in my life. So I actually went back to the dorm that night, and I started writing a letter to my family to tell them about this. And of course, I didn't send it, but I kept it. And it's one of the few things that I've written. I like to write a lot. But I had a habit actually of, I'm just beginning to really curb this habit. I had this habit of writing as catharsis, and so I would write something, often feel ashamed of it, and then destroy it. And the letter actually was something that I didn't destroy. It was something I actually carried with me for about 20 years. And so I had been thinking, thinking about how I was going to actually do this and handle this, this coming out to my family, and I just really struggled with it for a long time, and so I'm going to flashback here for a moment and say, back in 2008-2009, I had actually decided at that point that I was going to go ahead and medically transition, but I wanted my family's blessing beforehand. And I thought I would get their blessing. I also thought it would be painful, and a sort of painful process. And unbeknownst to all of us, my mom actually had a brain aneurysm, and unfortunately it burst. And she struggled with that for about 12, 13 days, and then unfortunately passed.
Oh, and goodness. I'm sorry, I didn't realize your mom passed away.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it was shocking. It was sudden. It was also it was a terrible and beautiful experience. It's kind of the way that I talk about it, because to have those 12 days with her were absolutely incredible, and they were very graced. But of course, it became the focus of our family and the focus of our work as a family for years afterwards. It still is. We're still working on that.
Did she die knowing who you were?
She did. She was actually the only person, though, in my family who knew who I was at that point in time. Mm. And she had actually asked me to not transition. And so this was going to be my sort of reattempt to my mom to say, "Hey, I've tried every way to not transition, and I'm miserable. And I feel like I will never be." It wasn't even a matter of I'll never be happy. It was a matter of I will never be safe.
Tell me what you mean by that. Tell me, because I really want to understand what that means for you, that you don't feel safe being in your current form.
Sure. So, and gosh, this one is so easy and so difficult to answer at the same time. Mm. When we think about what's the first question when somebody in your life tells you that they're pregnant, they're about to have a baby, what's the first question you ask them typically?
where's the dad?
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's
as a
good
single
question.
Mother for many, many years, I instantly go to, okay, where's the support system?
Awesome.
But I know what your question would be. Is it a boy or a girl? Yeah.
Yeah. And wait for me to check my privilege, by the way. By the way, I love that answer. So oftentimes one of the first questions that we have is, hey, you know, is it going to be a boy or a girl? And this is, in fact, how we begin to know and to accept and to love this new being, right, mm-hmm. is actually through their gender. And so there is, but it's also somewhat artificial, right?
Well, it helps them relate to the
right.
little one before the little one's there. It also is a time saver for a lot
yeah.
of people, because they go, oh, good, okay, well, I'll buy green if,
right.
you know, or, oh, are you going to go coral and gray for the nursery? Or, you know, it's almost like it's convenient to know.
Absolutely. It is convenient to know. And it is, I think it is the basis in which we begin to know and relate and understand people mm-hmm. and identify people. So it's this very, very foundational piece of identity, mm-hmm. both our own and then how other people approach us, understand us, and so on. So when you're literally inundated as a person that you're a girl, you're a girl, you're a girl, you're a girl, but inside you're saying, I think I'm pretty sure I'm a guy, actually, you know, I'm pretty sure you're wrong or I'm wrong. And if this is wrong in my mind, what else is wrong in my
Aww.
Mind? You know, I mean, that for me was, it was this very foundational, it was, I literally felt crazy, all the time and untrusting of other people, of myself, of the world around me. And part of that was just because of those very basic dynamics. And then I can also speak to, as well, having grown up, I was very fortunate. You're right, I did grow up in the South. I grew up in the Philippines and the South, a military family. But I did most of my growing up actually in Arkansas. And my mom's family is from Arkansas. I have a twin brother. I don't know if you remember that.
I do. I do.
Yes. So that was awesome. That's also kind of a trip, by the way.
Yeah. So tell me, so you feel safer now that so you've started the medical transition.
I have.
Your family knows. So,
yeah.
So it's out in the open. You
yes.
are living in Seattle. You have
yes.
a community around you of people who love you. When you posted on Facebook, your bio, you know, asking people for help on your bio, everybody was, oh, just be yourself. We love you. We love you. I mean, you certainly have a lot of love around you. So tell me what the transition, where you are in it and what's to
sure.
come. 'Cause I know it's got to be a little
sure.
scary too.
Yes and no. And again, it was really like one of those, you know, one of those very, very easy, very, very difficult decisions. And everything that we're talking about plays into that decision. So, easiest way to answer this right now is actually just to tell you exactly where I am. So I started, hormone therapy in November of 2013. So just shy of a year and a half ago, I started taking testosterone. And the way in which I take it is that I give myself an injection once a week. And it's been a fascinating process.
Tell me about that, because I've heard testosterone can give you immense amounts of focus and energy. I mean, have you noticed any of those kinds of effects?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. It's crazy. It's really, really... it's fascinating, and I have to say, I feel the thing that I think about every day is I feel in awe of humans that go through, and I got to do this too, and I was a mess of humans going through puberty as teenagers and without the social supports and without some of the
my son's 15 now. And
oh, yeah.
the other day I went in to get him from his room, and he was napping and his arm was up over his head and he had all this hair under his arm. And I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I was just like,
to have it.
I mean, no wonder he sleeps like 20 hours a day practically when he's not in school. Like this kid is just growing and changing so fast.
Oh,
it's fascinating and scary for me as his mother. I'm like, oh my God, my little baby.
Right. Are you like, are you always sick? Because you're just sleeping all the time.
No. I check him, make sure, because when he was a baby, he had issues, health issues.
Right.
And
that's
so
right.
I go in and put my hand in front of his nose all the time to make sure he's breathing, just because I'm
that's great.
I'm that kind of mom.
That's great. So I'm definitely experiencing that. I definitely, you know, I really would like to sleep a lot more than I do. It's all the things that people talk about. Like, my appetite is incredible. My grocery bill is through the roof in comparison to what it used to be. I'm literally always hungry.
So far, this doesn't sound good.
I've actually thought it was awesome up to this point, but now to the point actually where I'm like, okay, I have to actually now be just, I can't just like joyfully eat pizza and you know, and drink beer and play video games, you know, all day. I now actually need to be like, I need to actually remember that I'm 38 years old and adult and contributing member of society. The other interesting thing sort of time-wise that happened here is that so I'm a consultant for work, and so I'll work for certain stretches of time, and then I'll have some time off. In the past 2 months, I've actually had time off, and so I keep referring to this as my, you know, as my boyhood summer, despite the fact that we're in winter. And it's been great because I have actually really gotten to sleep in, to play Nintendo. I wasn't allowed to play Nintendo as a kid.
You're going through.
Oh, yeah.
It is adolescent. It sounds kind of fun, other than the always hungry.
So much fun. and that actually being my point, actually, it's been a great time. It's been so much fun. But I always have to counter this and just say that I am in a very, very privileged position in my life, in that I have a great job. I have a great company that I work for that's incredibly supportive. I'm white, I'm male, you know, I'm middle class, and I'm incredibly well loved and supported in my community. And so, heck yes, I'm having a great time. But I'm also really, really aware that not everyone has those things.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You're listening to Changemaker with Zina Muzyka.
So emotionally, it's like you're coming into your own. You know, you're moving into middle age. Ugh, I hate that term. I just turned 40. Oh my God. I feel like a kid, but I'm like, oh yeah, I'm 40. Oh yeah, 40 for some reason, just like all of a sudden I'm older. And I'm like, really? Anyway, so, but I agree with you. I'm having fun too. I'm enjoying myself finally. I'm not taking things so seriously. I'm not taking myself so seriously. So you're going through that, but what happens next in your transition? Like, so you're on the hormones, but eventually you're going to have surgery, right?
So yes, I am. Every person's story and path is unique. There are, of course, some common threads that run through all the stories, or most of them. So for me, my decision was that I would go through hormones, so that I would also have what's called top surgery, and so essentially I'll have a double mastectomy. But I'll keep the nipples. So they'll be regrafted on after at the end of the surgery. So
how important is that to you? How important is it to remove your breasts?
Vital.
Okay.
It's vital. Yeah. I think there are a few different things that kind of play into that. One is that I am a really, really well endowed, unfortunately. I was a well endowed female bodied person. And so I have a really, really big chest.
Got it.
there are no amount of binders that really actually fully flatten my chest. So I actually started binding in college, and I've literally been binding my chest now for 19 years.
Isn't it hard to breathe?
Yeah, it is. It's hard for me to take a full breath when I have my binder on. And anytime I'm out of the house, I'm binding. I've just gotten to the point now where, or in the past year or so, that when I'm home, I take it off because it's just too uncomfortable. And so I personally wear a binder that goes all the way down to my hips, and it's a triple layer of compression garment on the front and just a single stretchy layer on the back. And so, there are definite physical impacts to this. One is that it is harder to breathe. You are literally compressing your breast tissue, my breast tissue. That has some health impact to it. Oftentimes people get they're sort of bowed in shoulders.
Yeah.
That's definitely something that I struggle with. And I'm trying to actually counter that a little bit with weight training right now. It's a backache. It's difficult to breathe. When I have a cold and I'm binding, I'm pretty darn miserable. I'm literally wearing three layers of extremely tight compression garments every single day of the year. For going on 19 years. It's not good for your skin. It's not good for your health.
What would happen if you decided just not to bind it anymore? Is it just that you feel so out of place inside the body, your body with your breast tissue?
Yeah.
And so when you look down, if your breasts are unbound, you just go, oh my God, like I'm in the wrong body. Is that what it's like?
I'm 38 years old and I'm still like, how'd they get there? Yeah. really, I just, and it's not for any lack of familiarity. Yeah. One of the things actually, and I've heard other trans guys talk about this, and it was so incredible for me to actually hear other people talk about this. There is this phenomenon that happens to me, particularly in the mornings when I wake up. Some guys actually do choose to bind while they're sleeping. I don't. So I just sleep with a t-shirt on. I don't sleep with my binder on. Every single morning without fail, I will wake up and turn over either to a partner, if I have a partner at the time, or my dogs, and I'll like reach over to cuddle them, and my breasts will get in the way, and I'm like, what happened? What happened during my sleep?
So you're in a body that you don't relate to.
No, and then I have this moment of literally dissociating. I have this very, very dysphoric. Every single morning, I can point to a specific moment in which I decide to actually begin to ignore my body. And
that's so unhealthy. I'm really worried about this binding thing with you, honey, because the breath is so key to all health and well-being.
So many things.
So you'll do the top surgery, and then are you done?
So for me personally, yes. That will be the end for me. And again, for a few different reasons, but I also really, it's always really, really important for me to say that no matter what choice a trans person chooses to get their body to the place that they can own it and love it and feel at home is as long as it's healthy, it's consensual, it's sane, that's the right choice. So for me, that right choice is hormones. I'll be on hormones for the rest of my life, and top surgery. And eventually I will also have a hysterectomy. And at that point, I'll reduce my testosterone intake by about half.
Interesting.
So
do you worry about all these hormones going through your system? Do you have any concerns?
Absolutely. In the grand scheme of things, and I always want to be careful about how I do talk about this and talk about concerns, and I appreciate the safe space to do this. But absolutely, and it was one of the reasons why I did take such a long time to make the decision, is that we didn't have a lot of evidence-based medicine about hormones. And I frankly, whether you're trans or you're not, and you're taking any sort of hormone, and I would include birth control in this, we don't know very much about hormones.
Well, except they're the most powerful thing on the planet.
Precisely. Yes, absolutely correct. But I would say that medically speaking, they're incredibly powerful, they're incredibly nuanced, and I still feel like we're and again, across the spectrum of hormone treatment, whether it's for trans folks or for folks dealing with infertility issues or whatnot, I think we're still shooting in the dark a little bit here.
I agree.
You know, and so I have some. So I personally had. So I don't have judgment for anyone who has gone that route. I thank, you know, the trans folks years and years before me who are part of these studies. So that we do now have some evidence-based medicine happening. Thank you so much. And yes, it was part of the reason why I hesitated. I already had a hormone disorder. I hate to say disorder. I already had some interesting hormones to begin with, you know, going into this, and that I already grew facial hair. I already looked very, very male before I started transitioning. If I had a period, it was maybe once a year. I already had a very high level of testosterone in my body. And so that also for me made this a little bit more, and because of those things, I had a higher risk of specific types of cancer. Yeah. And so, I was always very, very thoughtful about how this would impact that. And ultimately, actually, this is safer for me.
Wow. So let's go through, you sent me some commonly asked questions.
Yes.
And I wanted to go through those. And some of them I think are silly. and some of them I'm actually, you know, like, which bathroom do you use? You use the male bathroom, right?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I do.
So, yeah. So for those of you listening who are curious, you know, you can also tweet me at Mistress of Tea and ask questions. And although Henry and I won't necessarily be on air anymore, we're close and we can answer your questions. And then, why do you think you're a man? I mean, they asked that, so we've already gotten into that. How do you become a man? We've already gotten into that. Mm-hmm. How old were you when you found out you were trans? You knew you were from an early age, but you heard the word when you were about 17 when I met you.
Yeah.
And then this, why can't you just be a lesbian, a butch, a dyke, a woman? So tell me about that. People actually ask that?
Oh, like, gosh, yeah.
Like they say, it would be just so much easier if you could just be a lesbian.
Right. Because I'm like, you know, lesbians.
Yeah, because so you easy. Pick this, right? Otherwise. You pick this. So you obviously are going for, you're choosing the hardest path possible, right?
Right. I was just like, there's so many things wrong with that question. I mean, how do I actually, you know, what's the first point of approach on that one?
It's odd. Yeah. But right, but for those of you listening that actually are curious, like, we don't want to make it sound like I'm curious about a lot of things. Like me primarily, it's just the moment you know, and then the fact that you feel like your body belongs, you know, it's just not the body you were meant to be living in. Like, that to me is the most curious thing. And I have some I have kind of a crazy theory. Is it safe for me to ask you? Or to tell you what my theory is. So, I might make some enemies here. I'm not sure. But I believe in reincarnation. And I think we come through many, many times. And, you know, we have these memories. And I think sometimes we come through in our bodies. And the body is still, like, and we're still who we were last time. but we're moving into kind of a transitioned body. I don't know why I believe that. I think I read it in a spiritual text at some point, but does that seem like it's even slightly realistic, or is it totally off base?
So for me, that resonates very, very much. It's funny, actually. I was actually writing in my journal about this today, because one of the things, a lot of the times people will ask me, you know, why did you finally decide to do this? And it actually, there's so many things that went into it, but ultimately the thing that kept coming back to me is that I'm not sure, I'm a deeply spiritual person. I grew up in the Episcopal Church. I'm still Episcopalian. One of the wonderful things about that particular church is that not only do they accept questions, they invite questions. Mm-hmm. And so it was a really, it was a gift for me to grow up in that denomination. That being said, I still have a lot of questions, and I have a very deep faith, but it's often difficult for me to actually describe that. But one of the things that I have thought about, and I think about really daily, many times a day, is I also come from a trauma background, and for me, those two things are my responses to being trans, my responses to coming from a trauma background are very, very interrelated. And it would be very easy, and in fact, it was very easy for me for a very long time just to choose to not deal with those things. But the thing that I kept coming back to every single time was that if in fact we continue to come back, and if in fact we continue to come back because we still have work to do, then let me go ahead and take care of that work now. Mm-hmm. Because the next life will be that much easier. Mm-hmm. And not even for me, but I also, the other part of this, and it sort of covers the ground that in case we're not coming back, is sort of, who am I in the world? What am I putting out? And the reality is that when I'm unsafe, when I'm unsupported, when I'm unhappy, when I am reacting purely from a trauma space, because I haven't done my work, and there are lots of reasons we don't do our work, so this is not victim blaming by any means, but if I have the capacity to do the work, if I have the resources to do the work, and I choose not to do the work, then I am choosing to put pain out into the world. Mm-hmm. And I would rather not. Mm-hmm. And sometimes
go ahead.
That's the thing that gets me motivated in the day.
So I'm a publisher now. I have a publishing house, mm-hmm. called Enliven Books at Atria, Simon and Schuster, and we're publishing our first title is called Bouncing Forward, and it's about post-traumatic growth. And, you know, in talking about trauma, they found that up to 90% of people who go through trauma actually experience immense emotional and spiritual growth afterward, and mm-hmm. that it deepens their experience of living. Have you found that to be true for you?
Absolutely. But gosh, it took some work and some time, you know? But yeah, without question, people have asked me before, and kind of going back to all of these questions are such full circle questions, kind of going back to safety. I have been assaulted several times as an adult because people didn't know, you know, quote unquote, what I was.
Assaulted, like beating you or?
Both physical and sexual assault.
I'm sorry.
Because there is a I can't even call it a response. There is a reaction that people sometimes have when they can't actually identify male or female that can become really violent. And we do have an epidemic of trans violence in our country, in the world, but I really like to look at it in terms of our communities, because it's our communities in which we can actually make a difference, and we can actually make a change.
So you've been assaulted, so you are part of this these incredible statistics I read earlier.
Yeah.
And so what can we do to make this stop? I mean, this confusion you're seeing, like, so they can't mm-hmm. figure out if you're male or female. And so they feel yeah. violently towards you. They assault yeah. you as a, what, I can't even imagine where that comes from. It's a human to human, and a right. human assaulting another human. Because they don't right. understand it, they become violent. What mm-hmm. what do you think we can do to help stop that?
So that's a wonderful question, and actually it's a question I don't get as often as I wish I did. And I think that it really truly is as simple. I do not want to oversimplify this. That's why I want to be careful about how I say this. I think the first steps truly are saying, I'm a trans ally and I have space for trans folks in my life. You
Absolutely.
Are safe with me.
Yeah.
If we share space, whether I know you or not, you will be safe. You will be respected and you will be honored. I
downloaded a book, How to Be a Trans Ally. And I have to say, I was a trans ally before I even heard that term.
Yeah, right. And I think one of the interesting things that happens is I think that a lot of people already are naturally suited to being trans allies, but then they worry that they don't have answers or they don't fully understand it or that they'll say something offensive. And all of those are valid concerns, but don't let that stop you. You know, here's what I would ask. If you have a question, come from a loving and respectful place. Mm-hmm. Hear me when I say I can't talk about it right now, you know, or do your homework before you even actually talk. You know, if you're a person in my life and you're a friend, you're a colleague, you're someone that I see every day, I actually may not want to be your source of information.
Yeah.
Because that's personally incredibly fatiguing. So, you know, go find your resources and go learn about it. And then also understand that when you see an individual who's trans, that's an individual and that their story is unique, their path is unique, and we want to honor everybody. And in that same vein, I do actually offer myself as a resource to people to say, hey, I'm that person that while I'm very introverted and I'm actually very shy most of the time, I will talk to anybody, really. I mean, I'm half Irish, half Southern. That's
but you said something earlier that I actually think needs to be called out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not necessarily in your daily life where you're mm-hmm. going to work and you have a job to do, or
yeah.
you're being social with a group of friends and it's time to unleash and have fun and have a beer
right.
and talk. You don't necessarily want to be their source of education. So
yeah.
I think what you're saying is empower yourselves with the education and
right.
I'm here for you, but I don't want
right.
that to be the only conversation we have.
Because right.
it would be like somebody coming up to me and asking me every day, like, oh, how does it feel to be a woman? What's it like being
right.
being a mom? Like,
right.
wow, you're married. What's that like? You know, it would be fatiguing. So it makes a lot of sense.
Right. Well, and the other part of this too is it, absolutely. And the other part of this is that the trans identity may or may not be safe. So there are times when I'm in the grocery store that if somebody, and this really does not happen very often any longer at all. I'm not a big fan of the term passing. I'm not, I think it's complicated. I'm not a big fan.
What's passing?
So passing is, great question. Passing is, in the sort of trans world, if I pass, quote unquote, it means that I'm out in the world and people are identifying me as male.
Got it. Well, I was actually going to ask you about that. Do
mm-hmm.
you, because you look male.
Yeah.
I mean, you looked male when I knew you when you were 17.
Right.
I mean, I never identified you as male or female, but you know, you were always just you, but,
right.
but do you pass now? I mean, is that's what you're talking about, passing, right?
It is. And so for the most part, for the most part, I walk through the world and people people are identifying me as male. They're using male pronouns. They're saying sir and things like that. And I appreciate that for a lot of reasons. It validates how I feel about myself and how I see myself. It's also safer when people identify me as I still will hold my breath in certain social circumstances because I'm just not sure which way somebody's gonna go when they begin to use pronouns and if they and I may or may not correct them in the moment and a lot of that actually has to do with safety and fatigue, where I'm not necessarily going to always identify myself as trans because it may not, in fact, be safe. Because people are, I will tell you that the three assaults that I've experienced were terrible, were absolutely awful, and equally as awful is just the stuff that people say to me regularly, you know. And that I'm wrong, or that I'm confused, or I'm crazy, you know, and that is just as damaging, I guess.
Tell me, how have you healed from the assaults, and what resources are there for the trans population to both be safe? You've mentioned the word safe has been the ongoing theme through all of this, and it it breaks my heart that another human will feel unsafe and then have the evidence of people's ignorance as in the version of an assault. I mean, I'm so sorry, but tell me, how did you heal, and what resources are out there for other trans people who need, support?
Sure. So there are not a lot of trans specific resources out there right now, which I'm sad to say about that. A couple I do want to throw out, though, is Trans Lifeline is a newer resource. They're absolutely amazing. It's all volunteer, and the volunteers who are answering the phones are trans. You can actually go onto the website and you get a very, very brief bio of who is actually answering calls at the time, and so that you actually have the ability to potentially speak with someone that maybe is closer to your identification than not, which I think is amazing. Here in Seattle, we have a group called the Northwest Network, and they support and do advocacy for domestic violence and sexual assault, specifically to queer communities, and they definitely include transgender and transsexual folks in that. And I've just been a huge fan of them for a very, very long time. Off the top of my head, those are the two that I know of.
So Trans Lifeline, is that translifeline.com? We'll look it up.
I think it is. I'll shoot you a link and make sure you have the right link.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Changemaker with Zina Muzyka.
Henry, the other thing is if your life is a pie and there's 100% of the pie, how much of your life is spent thinking about this?
97%.
So your life is your karma, your what you came to Earth with this time is to be in this experience and to help others through theirs.
That's my mission. Yeah. And I've chosen to accept it. Yeah.
And so you're an IT consultant, and mm-hmm. and what would you say your biggest intention for your life is so that you can help others? I'm referring to Transparent because it's this new Amazon show that won two Emmys, and it's just beautiful and heartbreaking and gorgeous and everything at once. So I think more media is so key helping, because, you know, absolutely. Even with the gay population, you know, the more shows that show that gay people are the same as us and want the same things, love, belonging, a home, a comfort for their children. Like, there's no difference between us. So, you know, is that what you are going to, you know, be doing a little bit more of, or tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. So I am an IT consultant by day, and I love it. I love that work. But my personal work, and it's actually not a but, because I think they are integrated in some ways. My personal work, though, is actually to, you know, I try to, not always successful, but I try to live my life by the campsite rule, which is leave it better than you found it, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is the thing that that I can easily share and that I can easily talk about. And so if me telling my story helps someone, sure, I'll do that. If me answering questions makes a little space for someone, absolutely, I'll do that. I think you're 100% correct. We do need more people in the media. And it's interesting because, and I really like Transparent, and part of the reason why I like it is because Maura is so complex, and it's not just about her being trans. It's about so many other things, and they have done a really
beautiful.
And she's fought, and she's heroic, and she's, you know, all these things. I mean, it's great. I know a lot of people have some criticisms for it. I'm a huge fan. I'm so grateful that it exists. I credit Laura Jane Grace and Laverne Cox for being out, for me being able to actually finally come out to my family to say, here's an example, you know, different expressions, different presentations, but here's an example.
Well, the media does hold that much power with people.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I would even say that, and this is where I back people up a little bit and just say, we're not even to the point of, I think, even having role models. Like, we just need to know that these people, like, that people like us exist.
Yeah.
Like, we're still at that base level. We're still that foundational, right? Mm-hmm. And so you know, culturally, we are still in a survival mode. And so I got to make sure everyone's getting out of the trenches.
Yeah,
you know, and
absolutely.
That's my job. I mean, it's part of my job.
Well, I love it. You know, Henry, I am so thankful for you and your courage and your grace and your willingness. And, you know, I'd like to invite you back and we can have conversations, you know, another conversation after your next stage, or, you know, after a next milestone of development emotionally, you know, regardless of what happens with your body. I know that you will be shifting inside all the time, repeatedly, and growing. And so I want to just put out for our listeners at this point in the show to seek out answers and to consistently and persistently activate your compassion, because as Henry has shown us in this episode of Changemaker, that this is not easy. This is not something that makes life all that much, you know, free flowing and easy sailing. This is actually hard. You know, you said yourself, Henry, you're 97% of your thoughts are, you know, somehow affected by your gender and the shift that you're going through. So I would ask our listeners to really, you know, dig deep and have compassion and have an open mind and heart, and really make a safe place to be a trans ally and make a safe space in your mind and heart to not judge and to be open and loving no matter what.
And to be active, the one thing that I would add, thank you. And the one thing that I would add is that, I guess there are two things. One is I also want to say my life is also gorgeous and beautiful and amazing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is because I'm trans. I also always want to say that I'm so proud and happy to be exactly who I am. And I'm so grateful to be exactly who I am. And it's been a little tough.
And what a rich experience.
Kind of, yeah, it's been a little rough sometimes. But the other thing is about being an ally and being supportive is please do not be passively supportive. Be actively supportive. Actively tell people. I actually asked my friends to do this on Facebook. Sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not. But I literally want you to say, I'm a trans ally. You're safe here. You're safe with me.
Right.
Because when you don't say that and you're passively supportive, it's the same as not being supportive.
That's a great point. So is it a hashtag trans ally? We can post that on our social media and start to, continuously create a conversation or how do you suggest people do that?
It can really be that simple. Trans ally, trans lives, hashtag trans lives matter. Hashtag you belong. That's one that I've been trying to get started.
I love that.
A campaign on that. Anything, it seems small, but it makes such a huge difference. When I see somebody, on Facebook who I haven't spoken to, since high school or something like that, and they make space for anyone, and they go out of their way to be an ally to anyone, I go out of my way to say thank you.
Wonderful.
And just how important that is, because they very well may have saved a life, truly.
Well, Henry, thank you for taking the time out of your immensely rich experience of living to share with me. And I missed you. And I hope that, we can go beyond Facebook the next time I'm in Seattle visiting Tully's or anything. I'd love to see you. And the next time you're in California, you got to come camp out in my yurt. And it's there's a hammock outside. I'm recording from my yurt right now.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So for our listeners, you can find me on Twitter at Mistress of Tea. You can find me on Facebook at ZHENA. I'm on Instagram at ZHENA1. And Henry, where are you on social media?
So I'm on Facebook. I, of course, have the most complicated name ever. It's Rabbit Bus, rabbit with two T's. I'll send you some links if you want a link to the podcast.
Great, I will.
Yeah, and then Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Then I'm working on a couple of social media projects that we actually don't have foundationally set yet. So that will be coming along. So I'll ping you with that as we move along
too. Great.
But by all means, if you're listening to this and you have questions, find me. And I'd love to be a resource to anyone whenever I can.
Great. Awesome. And so thank you for all of you for listening to Changemaker. And we are so grateful that you decided to spend this last hour with us. I hope with my heart of hearts that it inspired you, opened your eyes, helped you feel new emotions and have new ideas. So here's a cheers for change, and I'm sending you all my love. Thank you so much.